ancient astronauts, sky gods, sky disks, rockets, shams, and quotes from texts. This is one heck of a page right here, and I'm very glad you're here. As you come to the page, at the top of the page is Wikipedia, but there are quotes from texts about the skyships. So if you want a quick straight from the text, there it is. Different texts. Okay, first slideshow. Before I get started, I need to make sure we're clear here. This is simply artifacts. This is not a religion. This is nothing I'm pushing, nothing. I have not pushed this onto you. You have come to my website of your own accord, and I'm so glad you did. There must have been a reason. So while you're here, let me say this. For those who cannot or will not listen, then see clearly what is now before you. Okay? For those who cannot or will not see, then listen well to what you will hear. Please stick with me. Please find the time to hear and see me out. If you can, finish this audio. This page is important. Okay, first slideshow. Ancient Mesopotamian astronaut sky pilots. Here's a little trick. If you hit refresh, you can start the slideshow over from the beginning. If you put your cursor on the artifact, the slideshow will pause until you remove the cursor. A brief description of what you're looking at will pop up. If that description is in the way of your viewing the artifact, then put your cursor on the other artifact and let the cursor pop, or the description pop up on it while you clearly view the first artifact. Okay. Well, the first artifact you're going to see when you refresh is a god. This is not the full artifact. This is a partial view of a god sitting inside a ring, which is a saucer, a disc. And this disc flies because it has wings. Now, that does not mean that there are physically wings on there. Not at all. What it means is that disc that god is sitting in flies. That's all that means. Now, that god is a giant god that comes from the planet Nibiru. They came here because their planet's in trouble, and they need things that Earth has, and Earth is bountiful of many things, including our DNA, which interests them very much. Anyway, it's the gold that they are in need of. It exists on this planet, and it exists on the asteroid belt, nowhere else in our solar system. Therefore, our planet becomes very important to them, and they came and colonized it because they knew they would have to stay a long time to get what they need and pick up maybe what they want. Now, how they did that is the gold was in most of it, the harder gold to get, but had great quantity, is in South Africa. The ancient mines of South Africa have been discovered today. 50,000-year-old gold mine. How can that be? Well, let me tell you, they were here mining the gold. They would send that gold up to the Garden of Eden where they established the colony. That was where their command headquarters were and their residences were and all their construction of this and that was. It all happened in Mesopotamia and the land between the rivers Euphrates and Tigris in southern Iraq. If you go up the Euphrates River, the way it ran back then, you will run into a ziggurat right off. You'll see Eridu, you'll see Ur, you'll see this one and that one and this one and that one. Just about every 50 miles, you will run into a step pyramid or ziggurat, okay? And that ziggurat, they call today a temple. Well, the temple was the residence of the god, right? Just like the Temple Mount. It was the residence of the god. So around that temple developed the earthlings in a city. So all of a sudden, earthlings moved from Neanderthal to civilized man living in a city with the concept of God and many other things. Now it begins. Our man's history begins. You are looking at artifacts from our ancient history that have been hidden from you. So as we go through these slideshows, as I asked, see with your eyes or hear with your ears. Let's do this together. First one, I said, second one, it's clearer. There are the people on the earth, and there is the God in the flying saucer above. Okay? God's on the earth, God's above. Next slideshow, 36, you've got the same thing. You've got the God in the flying circle with winged circle, in the flying circle, is above in the sky, flying. Next one, this is a beauty. Grab artifact 54. I think it's the fourth or sixth one. Artifact 54. What you're looking at is pretty much in black and white. There are the earthlings to the left. We'll start left to right. The earthlings are on the left. They are before the king. That is a king, that giant sitting on a throne. So what you're looking at is a smaller earthling coming before a giant king. And behind that giant king, we'll call it a semi-giant mixed breed king, behind that king is another semi-divine, semi-giant mixed breed, and so on. And above this seated king is, again, in a disc, a god is flying around right above the king. So to understand that concept all in one, you have the earthling paying homage to the king because that's where he gets his directions. Behind him could very well be the high priest. I'm not sure. But that is the king without a doubt. And he is much bigger, stronger, faster, smarter than the earthling. He also lives many times the earthling. Above him is the god who either that god or one of the other gods produced this king or produced the line that produced the king. For instance, that Genesis 6 will tell you the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and the days after when the sons of God came down, saw that the daughters of men were beautiful. They took any of them that they wanted, had sex, and then developed children. The children that came of this union were part God, part earthling. That makes them a demigod, makes them semi-divine, makes them a mixed breed. It also makes them a mixture of two different clocks for aging. He's part clock of the gods, who seem to be immortal, and he's part clock of the earthling. So therefore, he lives longer than the earthling, but not as long as the god. He is much bigger, stronger, faster, smarter than the earthling, but he is not as big as the god. Again, part and part. Okay? So when you're looking at a giant king, you're looking at a descendant of a god. There's no question about that. So when they tell you about these things, there's truth in them, although the stories may be totally changed. So you can't ask for a better artifact than this one. It gives you all three sizes of beings that all three look alike. All three were made in the image of that flying god. We were made, not created, we were fashioned into their image because they needed workers to do the work that they had been stuck with forever. And so comes the newly fashioned, instead of Neanderthal, he is Homo sapien. 1 million years of evolution, you see, has been skipped because of that god flying right up there and his need for replacements in the mine and in the farms and in taking care of the cows and the sheep and sewing the clothes and everything else, everything it takes to survive on a colony, they had to do. That's a ton of work. So there's like 300 in the mines, 300 in the Garden of Eden, setting up civilization. And the satellite possession that they now take. And 300 acting, about 300, acting as space truckers. And also stationed on Mars, taking care of the warehousing of the gold. So the shipments, the gold would go from the mine to the Garden of Eden, where Gibel would smelt it down into pure gold, much lighter. And when they get a load, they would ship that so-called lighter load, still very heavy, to Mars. There they would sit it in their warehouses and what have you. Developed by them, first time ever on that planet, and they would have a way station there. Their planet would come through our solar system every 3,600 years, approximately, 3,600 years. They age 1 year going around the sun. We age 3,600 years going around the sun. They're obviously immortal to us because we'll never see one of them age. And the mixed breed is obvious our leader. He's so much bigger and smarter. He's obvious. I can find him anywhere, right? And so man had leaders. And these leaders taught man the laws of the god. And the other giant, semi-divine leader was the high priest who taught man to respect God. and to rejoice in God's gifts to man. Does that make sense? And you're looking at it the way it was set up from the very beginning on artifact number 54. That is the whole story right there, guys. So have the ears or have the eyes or both. And as the artifacts come across on this particular slideshow, you will be seeing things you've never seen before. Alien gods flying in the skies thousands of years B.C. B.C. Not today, as being spotted by so many. B.C. when there were no lights to distract you from seeing the skies. And if one of those stars actually was moving, they knew what it was because they've seen them during the day as well as at night. All they have to do is look up or just simply listen to the king tell them, or listen to the high priest tell them, or watch it themselves as they come down or go up. It's nonstop with the space truckers bringing supplies, taking what they need on their planet or what they want. So as you go through these, some of these are newer, some of these are ancient, just ancient. Some of them are very clear. Some of them through age have been worn. But mostly what you're looking at is a scene, for instance. Let's go to number 35 under Ancient Astronaut Sky Pilots. Number 35, clearly shown here, is a flying saucer with three gods in it. If you have the eyes, look. If you have the ears, listen. There are three gods flying in that saucer right above the Tree of Life. And on either side of that Tree of Life, one is the goddess Ninhursag. The other is her brother, Enki. They were lovers, and they had a great love, although they were never espoused. So Enki, who had an appetite for every woman, perhaps that's why he was never espoused to her, but she was his love. Enki and his sister, because of desperation for the need of replacement workers, decided they would try to DNA manipulate beings they see on the earth. And so they created, through DNA experimentation, they created half this, half that. For instance, half horse, half cow animals. Okay? And they did that for the purpose of creating a beast of burden, something that can help them in the mines do the work, because that's where Enki's responsibility was. He and his family were stuck getting the gold. Enlil and his family, Enlil of course being the colony commander, Enlil and his family are in the Garden of Eden where the sun shines. Doesn't shine in the mines. He's in the Garden of Eden. And in that garden is life. That's their civilization. In the mines is what? Nothing but labor, labor. Anyway, through thousands of years of being in those mines, the workers are rebelling. Enki knows he must have replacements. He cannot get them from planet Nibiru. They won't send them. He tried to get a relief by trading places with his younger brother, Enlil. Enlil would not trade. They're stuck. Okay, what do you do? Well, they're too smart to do nothing. Enki and his sister started doing the manipulations of the beings they find on Earth. They can't find one or create a fashioned one that will take orders, that can understand and produce the labor they want. It's just not working out, all these different things that Enki's trying. And you'll see artifacts to all of this on either one of their pages, Enki's page or Nenhyrzog's page, because these are the ones responsible for fashioning Neanderthal into Homo erectus. These are the ones who gave us the missing link of 1 million years of evolution, happening seemingly overnight as far as history is concerned. As far as evolution is concerned, it happened overnight. It's impossible. In the air flying around there is the answer to how that happened. The reason it happened is labor. They needed different labor other than themselves. Enki and Herzog, Enki is the wisest of them all. And Herzog, she's the chief medical scientist, plus. They got together, they did the experiments, they produced the Lulu, the Adapa, the worker. Then Herzog exclaims in text, "I have done it. I have done it. I have removed the yoke of the gods and placed it upon the backs of man." There are many things she has said about this process. Go to her page, read the text, or listen. Look or listen, or both. So anyway, Artifact 35 tells you who did it, how they had the ability to do it. Tree of Life showing you what's going on there. And that artifact is nothing more than a rock carved down into a cylinder small enough to fit in your hand. Okay? Now that smooth cylinder is then reverse carved this scene that you're looking at on 35 and all these others were reverse carved on a round cylinder. Then they take wet clay, which is abundant. They take the wet clay and they roll that negative image onto the clay. And out pops the positive image and the scene that they want recorded for all times. Something happened in this scene that's so important. They went through the effort of making this cylinder seal, reverse carving the image, putting it on clay, firing that clay so hot that this artifact turns into a rock, and then it lasts for thousands and thousands of years. And so does the seal, which, by the way, that seal, just keep rolling it on wet clay, and you've got a copy machine to send to each city-state. So this event, was the news of it, was spread by this artifact handed out to all the city-states. They had their own communication, airless communication, not wired. So they had the whole thing. They had satellites so they can communicate with their planet and vice versa. You can see, in some cases, you'll even see the satellite. These artifacts show you all you've never seen. All I ask, look, listen, and then think about it. Okay. Ancient Mesopotamian astronauts, take your time, go through there, and you can fast forward with the arrow on the right, or you can reverse. The last one I'm going to go over with you, the rest you should look at, and let the brief description pop up. Here, on number, looks like five, number five, on the very first slideshow, what you're looking at is a black and white and the actual artifact. This artifact is hidden in a museum in Turkey. This artifact has never been seen by the public. This artifact was secretly photographed by Zacharias Sitchin, and we can certainly thank him for many things pertaining to this topic, his books, this artifact, and more. So what you're looking at is the Corvette model of a single-seater shuttle. Remember the United States shuttles and the Russian shuttles? They looked exactly like that. Take a look at the propulsion system. Looks the same. Look at the seated astronaut wearing the astronaut clothes and the astronaut boot. The whole bit. Look at him squeezed in his little capsule. Okay? How many times did we go into space or to the moon in this type flying machine? What we know today, we're only copying what they did way back then. Everything we do, everything we learn from them. It had all happened before. This is a perfect way to make that statement. Look at artifact number five. Okay, so spend time on this page, will you? It's worth it. Next slideshow is ancient Mesopotamian astronauts, the ones that are just hovering over the king. Here is the perfect example of a king that came from having sex with the daughters of man. That mixed breed was appointed to positions over the earthlings. That mixed breed became a go-between between the god handing his laws to the earthlings, or the god handing down what is expected to pay homage and so forth to him by the high priest down to the earthlings. All of these things were controlled by the god who lived right in town and had the high priest and the king totally under his thumb. And their odds are they were either his descendant or one of his brother's descendants or uncle's descendants. You see, they're relatives, half god, half man. And therefore, they're giants who were heroes of old, men of renown, reported to men of renown, and became our very first kings, positions of authority over man. A perfect situation for the gods to have a go-betweens between the labor and the god himself with what he's got to do. Lots of distance between that god and the earthling. Okay, so you go through these things on this particular slideshow. Oh, by the way, I must mention this. For instance, slide number 10E. 10E, you're looking at Darius, who's a Persian king. He's a giant mixed breed. The line, the bloodline that Darius comes from is the first one. His name was Cyrus the Great. He was a general under Alexander the Great. Alexander died young. He defied the gods, going into India. He dies young. His five main generals divide the empire, and the section of the empire that becomes Persia is given to the general Cyrus, who becomes Cyrus the Great. His family will rule for hundreds of years. Now, Artifact 10E is a member of his descendant who kept the bloodline advantages. Therefore, and you do that by marrying your sister, your half-sister, or first cousin, as did from Abraham all the way back to Adam. They all practiced that. So did these mixed breeds. Maybe they were mixed breeds. That's the practice they had, because if they did that, their descendants would have all the advantages of the bloodline of the gods, like they have. So you're looking at a descendant who was passed on advantages down to him, King Darius, the giant, the earthling behind him, giving him shade. There's a couple of them. And above him, of course, is his private air force, his private relative to the gods. If anyone can talk directly to the gods, I guess these mixed breeds can. Not the god, not the earthling. The mixed breed. That puts that mixed breed way over that earthling. And power is given him directly by the god. King messes up. King vanishes. Next king, please. And so it went for thousands and thousands of years. All of this has been hidden from us. All you got to do is look at it. Now, the point that I'm trying to make here on 10E, that artifact no longer exists. The one that's on the other side of 10E no longer exists. Just about everything you're going to see here, most of it no longer exists. How did that happen? That was ISIS, which is a fundamentalist Islamic sect of Islam that destroyed all evidence that kind of goes against Islam, the teachings, you know, of Christianity and Islam and Judaism. Maybe this isn't wanted by those religions, especially Islam fundamentalists. Maybe it's just not desired to allow you to know what the truth is. And so this truth has been hidden from you for at least 2,000 years. The artifact isn't hidden. The others are, but the ones carved on the side of the mountain are not. The very large ones that still are visible are not. Then the archaeologists came and, you know, dug them out and gave you the full vision. But they didn't have to do that on the ones on the side of the mountain. So man has been looking at this all along, not knowing what it means. The teachings of this were stopped completely, which put total authority into the king and into the high priest, and they could change the story any way they want. The artifacts tell you the true story, and whatever scene this is, it happened, or they would not have done all this. We wouldn't be looking at it if it didn't happen. You've got to think about this. So look, listen, think. What's it mean? I'm telling you what it means. All you got to do is go through it to convince yourself that your eyes are seeing this and your ears are hearing this. Next slideshow, ancient Mesopotamian launches and landings. Huh? Well, to get here, they got to land somewhere. To go, and they're going lots of places, they got to launch from somewhere. They're doing this through the space truckers. They call them the IGG, however you want to pronounce it. So you've got the miners, like I said. You've got the farmers, like I said, and the topside developers of civilization. And then you've got the space truckers stationed on Mars and flying missions to and from, okay? Only once, maybe twice, did an Earthling get a chance to go to their planet. Maybe even more, but we know of once, maybe twice. I'm going to show you twice. If you look under launch and landings, look at artifact 3I. And there are going to be many of them like it, because this tale, this scene, was carved and recarved and recarved many times. This scene was so important that you'll see many variations of this very scene. Maybe it happened more than once. Well, if you read the forbidden text of Enoch, it happened twice to him. So let's take a look. 3I, you're looking at an eagle taking a figure that looks like us straight up into the air. So the Earthling is getting a ride by the eagle straight up. You read the text, whether it be through the biblical text or through the text written about a Mesopotamian king from Kish, the city of Kish. His name was King Etana. Just maybe that's Enoch in the Old Testament. Enoch went to heaven, came back, told man a few things, left a book or two, and went back to heaven. Enoch was seen no more. He walked with God from then on. Well, he had to blast off twice, and lo and behold, Enoch describes exactly what it's like to look out the window as you blast off of Earth. Isn't that strange? Then he starts describing what he runs into as he flies by out to their planet. There's another text that you'll find on Enki's and Herzog's page. These artifacts you find on Kish page. The other ones I'm talking about is you'll find about Adam or Adapa and his blast off, because he is the model creature called man. He was sent by his fashioner, Enki, to Enki's father, the king on Nibiru, for the king to look at and make his own pleasing remarks or displeasing remarks about Enki and Herzog's, his children, what they did on Earth colony to assist the labor, breaking the backs of the gods. So you can read about King Anu and Enki and Adapa in that text. You can read about Etana in the other text, the myth of Etana, whatever. It's right there on the page called Kish, which is a city-state under Herzog, of course. Or you can find it under Herzog as well, under Adapa or Adam. Ancient Mesopotamian rockets and missiles. Okay, if we get to artifact number one, it's a modern day reconstruction that strange figuring under the Gilgamesh, who is, that is the name of a early king in Uruk. He's a giant mixed breed. His texts are taught in college. So you'll find the Epic of Gilgamesh or whatever many texts on Gilgamesh you'll find on the city-state Uruk's page. All the kings are found on the city-state's page for which they were king. So Gilgamesh is a great story. You should go check that out on Uruk. But anyway, the strange thing that you're looking at under the word Gilgamesh is the ancient gods showing you the three-stage rocket. That is the construction of a three-stage rocket. On the right, you might be able to see a black and white. I'm not sure if that's an actual artifact or I think it is, but even if it isn't, it's a tremendous, giving you the idea of the three-stage rocket, okay? A three-stage rocket is exactly what we use to go into space, to land on the moon or Mars or whatever. And at the top of that three-stage rocket is the command module. They called it the Shem. It is where the astronauts sit, and after the boosters are shocked and the weight is gone, and you are now in space, weightless, all you need is a little power to move around in your space capsule. So if you look at the next slide, which is 36, we've talked about this before. There's the Corvette model of a guy in his shim, his space capsule. But what's very important to look at, of course that is, but the one right next to it, number 4. The pop-up description is in your way, so move your cursor off of this, but let's look at number 4. Okay, move the cursor over to the Corvette model. Looking at number 4, this is an ancient artifact out of, let's see what the city that was. That was Kush, which was Nubia. If you go down the Nile, you'll run into Nubia and all the ancient artifacts there, of which there are many, many, M-A-N-Y-M-I-N-I, pyramids. Many pyramids and all kinds of artifacts. Anyway, this is one carved on a rock, as you can tell. That's a three-stage rocket sitting right there ready for launch. And standing next to the rocket are two astronauts. Ancient days. Way BC, how could this possibly be true? And anybody in Nubia, I guess, could go see this artifact. See, some of them are out in the open, and some of them, because they're too big, and some of them can easily be hidden inside museums all over the world, where only select people get to know about this. Today, through this website, all the people get to know about this. So open your mind. Open your eyes and see. Open your ears and listen. Then open your mind and think. That is a phenomenal artifact. We can argue this all you want. Are you lying? Don't trust your lying eyes. Or are your people of authority lying? Over here, number 5 is simply a three-stage rocket sitting with the power boosters are underground, while the shim is just sitting above the ground. The only thing visible above ground is the shim. but you've got a launch pad that's underground. This is Egypt. And of course, above the ground, you see the earthlings, you see the trees, and lo and behold, there sits a shim for even earthlings to see. And here's the artifact for everyone to see. That is, until it's destroyed. Here's a little tip, artifact number 6. All you're seeing are eagle-headed, eagle-winged gods standing beside this shim that is landed. What does that mean? The wings mean, as it does today, the wings mean that they are pilots capable of flight, not that they themselves have wings to fly like a bird. No, neither do our pilots. But our pilots wear wings. They're not a pilot until you earn your wings. They don't have wings. Neither did these astronauts. But this picture is showing you about these two who can fly, and they did so in that capsule. Plain and simple. When you learn to understand these, it is simple. If you look at number 7, which is a wonderful artifact of Marduk and his spouse, Sarpanit. And by the way, that entwined thing that looks like some type of design that you see everywhere, like a chain. It's the entwined serpent symbol of Genghis Zeta, who was a DNA specialist. The entwined snakes represent your DNA double helix strand. Okay, but in between them is a rocket, isn't it? Or are our eyes lying? There's a rocket with a shim. Rocket with a shim. Rocket with a shim. Now the symbol shows up of a rocket with shim sitting on the ground. It's just one of the symbols, like all these other symbols in the sky or on the ground. These artifacts are loaded with symbols of the gods, many of which we use today. Go to each god's page, you'll learn of his symbol. Okay, here's a beautiful, beautiful artifact. Number 9, under the rocket slideshow. If you look at number 9, you're looking at a Hittite artifact, the full artifact, or a good chunk of it. And it's almost, well, it's not a mirror image, so you've got two different scenes, one upside down, one not. One on the top, you're looking at a battle scene with the chariot going along, and, you know, something's going on in this scene. It looks like a battle's about to brew, and above that chariot is a cruise missile. A what? That's a cruise missile. Nothing is flying at the time of the Hittites. And if the Hittites see something that is flying, they probably recorded that event. Don't you think? That's what you're looking at. A Hittite event that they recorded. For all time, for guys like us to view and ponder, what does this mean? Thousands of years later, they all go back to the same meaning, those who came down to earth, an established man. This slideshow will show you rocket after rocket, some of them already being launched, some of them on the launch pad. It'll show you shim after shim. Some of these shims landed on Earth, some of them still flying. It'll show you other spacecraft. It'll show you other short travel craft. You've got the interplanetary craft and you've got the non-interplanetary craft, I'll put it that way. Artifact 12 is, wow, what a beauty. Every one of these are, you've never seen them before. You've never pondered these, have you? If you have, let's do it again. Artifact number 12, wow, you're looking at a coin. This is Inanna's temple with Inanna's shim parked at her temple. Huh? Did the ancients know about the gods? Did they know about their technology? Not know what it is, but they know what it looks like. So they copied the gods. They copied the what they saw, and they recorded it. Wouldn't you? So here you have a coin purposely done this way. These rock carvings, they've lasted a long time. And these cylinder seals that went on wet clay, as well as the cuneiform texts that went into wet clay, thousands and thousands of years old, they might be worth reading. So it's a very interesting artifact, one after the other. I find number 12 one of my favorites. The next one are ancient astronauts worldwide. All I'm trying to show you is it wasn't just Mesopotamia, but it started in Mesopotamia because that's where they landed and that's where they set up the command base and built their original homes. So in the period that the gods walked with man, it was in Mesopotamia. Okay, let's take the ancient astronauts and worldwide and refresh this. Let's start this from the beginning. First thing you see is Horus. Horus, this, the text will tell you, was given flying sandals by his, let's see, Horus would be his great uncle, Gibel. Gibel is the god of the kilns, the gods of metallurgy, the gods who fashioned whatever was needed by the gods concerning metals. Here's Horus is one of those, Horus being a god, a descendant, a child of Asher or Osiris. Asher, in my opinion, is a child of Marduk. Marduk, of course, is a child of Enki. So we're looking at a long bloodline of Enki down to Horus here. And Horus had flying sandals, and I'm sure he had much more than that. Next, you're going to see, these are more recent artifacts, I guess, from around the world, because from around the world didn't happen until after Mesopotamia. So as you go through these, you will see the Greek gods in a flying winged chariot, same way with Roman gods, and one of my favorites, again, is number 55. That is a Canaanite coin of the Hebrew god Yahweh in a flying chariot. Yahweh being a giant god and holding a symbol bird in a flying chariot. Canaanite. I thought they worshipped the pagan gods. Anyway, I think all of our knowledge taught to us is wrong. And I think we need to dump that thinking out and take a look at the new truth being shown to you. Yahweh in flight. Is that an earthling, little bitty one down there below on the right? And is that a giant God? Next, you'll start finding all kinds of things. Jericho, I mean, symbols and gods. And gods within shims. You have to look hard at the number 56. If you go top left, it's the second item you see is a god in a shim. Sometimes they're hidden. Sometimes it's right in front of you. India, there's a rock carving that's just... How long would it take to make that rock carving of that scene? That's just a scene in history preserved for all time. That's a flying house. You know, like if you stayed and lived in a flying apparatus for ever, years, for whatever. If you're going to fly, you're going to fly in your flying apparatus, and you'll be a distance away from the earthling who might hurt you. You can't afford to let that happen. So you keep your distance and you use go-betweens, you know, the giant mixed breeds, the semi-divines, your leaders, men of old, heroes of old, men of renown. So Genesis says, here we go with the Chinese in their flying chariots. Let's see what else we can see flying. That's another chariot. This is some type of chariot or disc. Then we go on to another, what, front room? I don't know what that is. Is it a bedroom? It's flying. And then we have the Chinese sip or the Japanese looking at this flying disc that has landed right before them. So we have the Chinese, the Japanese, the Buddhists. It doesn't matter. Please look at this one. One of my favorites for sure. It's artifact number 73. It is an artifact of an African-looking earthling with some type of spacesuit, some type of helmet or control box on his belly hanging on his spacesuit, and wings depicting that he can fly. And of course, he's got some kind of space cap and some type in his spacesuit that his legs are covered as well. Okay, so what you're looking at is an Olmec. An Olmec is the civilization when Ninga-Zeta was kicked out of Egypt by his older brother Ra or Marduk. When Thoth was kicked out of Egypt by Ra, Thoth or Ninga-Zeta just decided he would pick up some of the blacks out of Africa and he would go to the Yucatan. And for the first time, the Yucatan starts to become populated. And the first to populate the Yucatan were these blacks called Olmecs, brought from Africa to South America. With them, they brought artifacts such as pots in the shape of an elephant. There are no elephants in South America, but they are in Africa. There is so much evidence to back up what you're seeing. These are not false. These are true artifacts. So number 73 is the very beginning of the population of South America. It's hard for the Latino to understand, but it was started with a black civilization. Now, this used to be in the museum in Mexico City when they had the timeline of South America there. The Olmecs is where it started. Very unpopular, so I'll bet Mexico City has removed the Olmecs from the historical line. Anyway, I'm going to show you the Olmecs on Ningazita's page because he is the one who started that civilization. And he did it by flying some blacks to South America. They disappear, just like the Mayans disappeared. So I don't know what Ningazita is doing with civilizations, but he seems to start them and disappear them. Not sure what's going on there, but look at the knowledge Ningazita passed on to South America, and look at the structures Ningazita had built, and look at the rich history that exists there still yet to be discovered. Thank you, Ningazita. Hard to believe what you see, isn't it? Next, again, you're looking at, from South America, a man in his space capsule and wearing different astronaut items. And if you look, there's even a monitor by his head. That can't be. That's an Olmec pilot. Prior to Mayan. This is Yucatan. Keep looking. Keep looking. You'll see it all through the civilizations of South America. And you'll always see, look at this, and you'll always see or understand that it's Ningazita, the snake god, that comes down the steps of that one pyramid and right back up on the solstice. That's Ningazita, the architect of all the pyramids and ziggurats and whatever else you want to call them. Many artifacts that you're seeing here, some of them, I mean, you got to doubt if they're real. And who knows, one or two might not be when you get into this. But you got to trust the guy who found it or the museum who displays it. Somebody is telling you this is an artifact. Now, if you look at number 78, for sure, it's an artifact. If you look at 85, for sure, it's an artifact. But here's where I have some difficulty. And it couldn't be any clearer, by the way. If you look at artifact 82 out of Ecuador, it is an artifact. But let your eyes see the astronaut dressed the way the current astronaut is dressed. Right there, an ancient artifact out of Ecuador. Now, how could they know then how our astronauts much later would dress? It's impossible unless it existed back then. Take a look. You can't see it clearly. Then take a listen. You can't listen. Try to understand what is before us, what has been hidden, and what simply has been there all along. Try to relearn our history, and when you do, keep an open head of how it came about. Next one is the pièce de résistance. This is the one that hurts the most. If you look at sky gods and sky disks in Christian paintings, these paintings range from the 3rd century to the 18th century. Let's hit refresh because these are in order chronologically. The first slide on this slideshow of sky gods and sky disks in Christian paintings. Anyway, the first artifact is a painting of Moses receiving the instructions from God and 4 flying saucers in the skies as they fly away. Moses, unsure what date this is, but it's very, very old. Flying saucers handing Moses the 10 Commandments, the entire rules and regulations of the desert and the Hebrews. Right there. Next one, 3rd century. Something's flying. Looks like a flying chariot. These are Christian paintings. Next one, 3rd century. Number 2, please look closely. Move the cursor on number 3, but look at number 2. If what you see in the top center is a flying saucer. That flying saucer is over the tomb of Jesus. Jesus is resting in that tomb for 3 days, presumably under the protection and maybe under medical tension, quite probably, of that flying saucer. So did the flying saucer's technology bring Jesus back to life? That's what they're saying here in the 3rd century. Now, on either side of the tomb, of course, you have angels and you have Mary Magdalene, who simply came to anoint the body. She discovers the tomb is open. The angels are telling her Jesus has already left. He has risen, and you'll find him walking around somewhere. Huh? She runs back to tell the apostles, Jesus lives. Huh? What? How does this flying saucer fit into anything you've learned about Jesus? But here in the 3rd century, which is 201? Who knows? But it's the 3rd century telling you flying saucer and Jesus are somewhat related. And maybe angels and flying saucers are related. And maybe Mary Magdalene had something special with Jesus because I don't see any of the men. She's the one taking care of things. She's the one that's always there. So here's 3rd century, and we start with the resurrection. Okay. The next one is simply out of France, 6th century, UFO. The next one, simply number 4 out of France, in the year 842, and you have many UFOs. The next one, very interesting, the 12th century Greece. You are looking at the birth of Jesus, painted by a master artist with secret knowledge, obviously. So what you're looking at here is a flying saucer with people in it, beaming a light straight down upon the newborn baby Jesus. That light has an 8-pointed star in it. Off to the side, you see groups of angels. In the middle, you see another scene. One is the 3 wise men coming, and then you've got the other scene, and you've got the shepherds and so forth. But there's Mary with the baby. There are 3 different scenes with this, maybe 4 different scenes all going on here. Look closely. Either way you see it, there's a flying saucer in beings with wings on the earth, meaning they flew down, they came down, and beings in the sky and a flying saucer, taking direct interest in Jesus' birth. And of course, Mary has a halo. Very interesting. Next painting, 12th century. Anybody know of the Knights Templar? The Knights Templar, I think it was 1190, I'm not sure, somewhere in the 12th century. They were part of the group that conquered and took Jerusalem from the Muslims. And in taking Jerusalem, they wished to never let go of it, and they started building armies to protect their possession of it. They built castles all over the place to protect the land around what they've discovered. And what they discovered when they took Jerusalem was, of course, the Temple Mount. And under the Temple Mount, for the first time in, who knows, thousands of years, they went down under the Temple Mount and looked at all the tunnels and things that are that had been previously dug, I guess, by Solomon, who had it built. But in there were hidden artifacts. And they discover all these artifacts and they gather them up, and of course they're very valuable, perhaps pure gold and so on and so forth, religious artifacts and alien artifacts. But what do I mean by an alien artifact? Solomon had a ring that was quite magical. That's what I mean by an alien artifact. The Ark of the Covenant that could do all of these things for the Hebrews, that's what I mean by an alien artifact. These Knights Templar who took possession of the Temple Mount searched, because they know very well how to dig tunnels, they searched the tunnels that already existed and discovered valuable knowledge. Not just artifacts, knowledge. In that knowledge, and also because, like this painting will tell you, they've seen the flying objects. There's nothing in that sky that should be flying. If something does, they see it. And between this artifact, number 6, and the one next to it, you're looking at two Knights Templar showing you two different types of flying objects. They know what that is because they learned exactly what it is when they discovered things under the Temple Mount. They took those artifacts and kept them to themselves. And they took this thing called Knights Templar and they turned it into the biggest thing that ever existed this world has ever seen. So here begins the Masons, the Knights Templar, who have the secret knowledge that was hidden under the Temple Mount. This knowledge the Pope would certainly not like made public, but yet all those wealthy kings and what have yous, lords and what have out of Europe, now wants to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. The Christians can do that now. It's not exactly safe on the road, but it's safe when you get there. Christians have control. Knights Templar are the best of the best. Aren't they? The Pope says so. The King says so. We're supposed to donate to them. They're the best of the best. Well, so here's how this thing works. You want to go, say, from France to Jerusalem? You're going to take everything you own, because while you're gone, it'll be stolen. You won't have anything when you come back. Excuse me a second. Sip of coffee, I'm sorry. So what they did was, because the Knights Templar are the heroes, you could drop off all your possessions in France and get a receipt listing all that you dropped off to the Knights Templar. The Knights Templar would hold all your possessions in their possession, in whatever castle or your stockyard or whatever. They would take your possessions, physical possessions. You can now travel light and not worry about having everything back home stolen. That's tremendous. There's no reason now why I shouldn't go make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, right? All I need is the money to pay to get there. So, and they're taking you there safely, right? So that's what they do. You can drop off your possessions. They'll take care of it till you get back. Or you can cash them in for the same value when you get to Jerusalem. Just hand the Knights Templar your receipt given and issued in France. It is good for claim if you want it when you hit Jerusalem. If not, it's good for claim when you return to France. One little problem. If you get killed on the way, there, or back, by the Muslims who definitely attack the Christians anywhere they can, it's called get the Christians out of what they just grabbed from us, move them out. So there's always the conflict between these Christians and Knights Templar and the Muslims. So you're not going to make that trip without them. You've given them your possessions and you're using them to escort you there. They know the way. They're the great fighters. They'll protect you. And they've protected your goods. How do you beat that? Except on the way, many of them died, murdered by the Muslims who attacked the caravans, who attacked the travelers, who looked to rob you. And when they find that you have no gold on you, or very, very little for expenses, traveling expenses, you're talking about a disappointment for the thieves. That's good. Maybe they won't rob the next group. Whatever. You see the method here? This should work. And if you don't make it to Jerusalem, or if you don't make it back to France, all your possessions now belong to the Knights Templar. Let's say you live in France or England or Germany and you want to join the Knights Templar. Well, you have to give up women because these are celibate monks. You have to be a holy man, a monk, and you have to be a warrior. So these are poverty-stricken warrior monks who own everything. Strange, because this system of drop it off here and pick it up there or when you get back makes them filthy rich. And this secret society they become, these Masons, these Knights Templar, go to the Pope in addition to all this and say, Pope, you're going to promote us or we're going to destroy this whole thing you got going. Huh? Let me show you some of this, Pope. So the Pope has been blackmailed, to say it bluntly, since the Knights Templar showed up on the scene in Jerusalem and got back with the knowledge and kept the artifacts. So the Knights Templar now have secret knowledge and secret artifacts, and they're getting secretly filthy rich on pilgrims to the Jerusalem. It's Jesus, man. Go see what the Roman emperor's mother told you is where Jesus was born, Jesus was baptized, Jesus was crucified. Whatever you want to know about Jesus, she'll tell you where it happened. Of course, she's from the 3rd century. She wasn't there, but she's one of the first Christians that came public in Rome. She makes her son Emperor Constantine become Christian. Therefore, the Romans now have conquered and control Christianity. And Mother runs over there and designates this and that. Anyway, Knights Templar pick up the information. They show the Pope. They're blackmailing the Pope. The Pope promotes these people to join them, to donate to them, besides donate to the church, of course. So these people are blessed by the Pope. They're the holy monks and they're warriors. Nothing like it. Thank God for them. And they get richer. You're looking at the very first World Bank. Money changers. They're also travelers, which become ship travelers as well as overland travelers, sand, land and sea. Masons take over the shipbuilding. Masons take over, take over, take over. Masons become very powerful. They own everything. And then it becomes a major problem around 1307, somewhere in there, I think, where the King of France, who is in major debt to the Knights Templar, now they have become, in a couple hundred years, filthy rich. And kings have to borrow from them if they want war with England. France owes them. If England is going to war against France, England owes them. If the Pope's going to have his own little private Swiss army or what have you, or whatever other things the Pope's doing, whether it be building or traveling or whatever, that Pope is in debt to the World Bank. Everybody's in debt to the Knights Templar. The World Bank has now financially taken over. They've also, if they wanted to, real estate-wise, take over. So the Knights Templar become very, the most powerful around. And from them springs the Masonic secret societies, which are very much the exact same thing today. If you're anywhere near the top of any one Mason group, you know these things that I'm showing you. You probably know more than what I'm showing you. You might know less. Either way, this is the secret knowledge. Take a look. These are hidden Christian paintings used simply for the knowledge of those who do know, which are the Masons, and used to blackmail the Pope. Or maybe to blackmail the king. Or maybe to blackmail the imam. Or maybe to blackmail the Jewish high priest. You see, makes them very powerful. So, and that's exactly what happens, and they keep their power all through the centuries. Next, there's one out of, I think that's France. There are no balloons in 1338, nothing flying. Got to be one of my favorite all times, 9A. This is a painting, a masterpiece, as they all are, of the period. These are artists in secret societies. These are Masonic artists doing paintings that are probably never seen by the public. This particular one, 9A, is an entire wall mural of the crucifixion of Jesus. Now, this is on a monastery wall in Kosovo, 1370. Okay? Now, the monastery, the public's not going to get in there and see these secrets. But the monks, these secrets are right in front of your face, monk. You know, the ones that might be copying the Bible down and writing it, and maybe rewriting something, or just changing a word here or there. Don't know. Guarantee you, Constantine, in the 3rd century, when he took over the Jesus movement, he told all the bishops to come together in a meeting they held in Nicene. And what happened there, every bishop had to bring every gospel that he possessed. They decided on the king, Constantine, and the bishops decided on which gospels would make the final cut. So there's well over 104 gospels, totaling, when they bring them all together. And they go through those and they say, we'll keep that one, we'll throw that one out. Well, what does the Roman emperor do? He throws out over 100 gospels and keeps 4. And most of what you're reading, if not all, was not written at the time of Jesus. And a majority, or a very large chunk, is from Paul, who was a Roman agent hired by Rome to go undercover and assassinate the Jews, the Jesus movement, those in the disciple, the closest circles of Jesus, had to be eliminated. They wrote their books, their gospels, and they're talking about it, preaching. And they went in many directions with different ideas of how to do this as well. But anyway, here sits the Rome saying, we're going to organize it all under me, and we're throwing out over 100 of these gospels. We're going to give you Paul. And then we're going to give you Mark, written 55 years after Jesus' death, and John, 91 years after Jesus' death. I mean, come on. If you want to read a gospel from Jesus' brother, or the time, the exact time of Jesus, you've got to go to the Nag Hammadi scrolls or the Dead Sea Scrolls. What they are some bishops refused to do what the Roman emperor wanted. They just knew better. This is wrong. This is wrong. I'm not going to burn every one of these. So they hid them and buried them. And we found them in 1947, 1948. Nag Hammadi is discovered first. Those scrolls, that's Egypt, Nag Hammadi, Egypt. And the Dead Sea Scrolls are discovered second. All you ever hear about are the Dead Sea Scrolls, of which you really don't get to read. You do and you don't. When you look at the Nag Hammadi Scrolls, wow! You've got a Gospel of Mary Magdalene. You've got secrets that Jesus' brother James is telling people, select people. You have secrets being passed around that Jesus told me or Jesus told you. This secret? Huh? And Peter's talking about Jesus kissing Mary Magdalene on the lips and how he loves her more than any of them and how he has probably told her more secrets than any of them. And he wants her to spill the beans. What do you know? We don't know, Mary. What did he tell you? And I might not like you anyway, because you got more attention than I did from Jesus. And Peter ain't exactly got the best personality anyway. So what you're talking about is you might find out that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were very much an item and possibly, just possibly, after Jesus is crucified, Mary Magdalene turns up pregnant. They all got to run for their lives or stand the consequences. Oh, Mary supposedly ascends. Well, Mary and Mary Magdalene headed, they got out of there. And they survived. They wound up in France, in the area today, France. And from there, you'll find early churches designated to honoring Mary Magdalene as the special one who took care of Jesus. And of course, Mary's mother is there. Mary Magdalene has her own symbol. You'll see it in these paintings over and over, where four fingers are there, the middle two fingers are stuck together, the baby finger and the index finger is spread apart from the middle two, and if you turn that standing up, you have just created an M for Mary. And you will see that secret M in many of the secret paintings, Masonic paintings. So, you're looking at 9A. This is a Masonic painting, a secret society, but it's also a monastery. Monks, not necessarily the warrior monks, but they have the secret knowledge. And, of course, they're isolated somewhere in some monastery. So, anyway, here they are, 1370. They're looking at this a complete wall mural of Jesus' crucifixion. On the left is something in the air. On the right is something in the air. If you blow it up, you're looking at it down below. There is a guy who looks more advanced than those on the ground, but he is seemingly piloting this flying object. Excuse me, looking forward at Jesus dying on the cross. To the right in the sky, you can see here is a item of a man looking backwards at Jesus dying on the cross. Two different flying objects, two different beings, advanced beings, astronauts, one might say, looking back at Jesus dying on the cross. Okay? 1370. Now, look, listen, and if you got time, think about it. And there it is again. It's a fresco. This, by the way, was recently blown up. It no longer exists. I guess knowledge of it got out. I don't know if it was this, but knowledge through somebody of this got out. It's now gone. But here it still lives, and you're looking at it in detail. Next, and I don't own these. I found these. Everything you see here, I do not own. These are out there known by others. This isn't some collection I've had hidden. This is what the Masons have had hidden, and they're a large group of people. So, number 12, we're looking at 1383 to 1440, somewhere in there, and there's Jesus in a flying saucer with many other saucers. And then it goes, whatever that is, the legend of the cross, 1420. Next, number 14, Jesus crucified again with a flying saucer on the landed on the bottom right of the cross. That's 1460s. What did they know then that we don't know now? Strange. And that looks like Sputnik, the first satellite the Russians launched. That's number 15, painted somewhere around 15, late 1400s, early 1500s. And that could be the all-seeing eye up there on top. A definite Masonic symbol. Secret Masonic paintings. The next one is a blow-up. This painting from 1486 is the one that blows my mind. I have a personal story that goes with this that I will not get into. But this, let me bring up the full painting. Here we are, number 17. Number 17 is without a doubt a masterpiece painting. And without a doubt, it's been hidden, or you'd be going, what's this? The entire world be doing that. These paintings are hidden for the Masonic purpose of secret knowledge. And of course, passing that on from generation to the next century, to the next century, all the way into and including today. Let's look at this painting, this artifact. I move the cursor to the other one so you got a full view of it. Okay. Above in the sky is a flying saucer beaming down a light. That light goes straight through that building and hits Mary Magdalene, or it hits Mary, the mother of Jesus, on the forehead. She is kneeling in prayer. So in her moment of prayer and meditation, she is hit by a flying saucer's beam of light. And down below on the surface are two angels coming around the corner. These angels are coming to tell Mary that she will be pregnant, and this will be a special event for her not to be concerned and all of these things. Because for a 14-year-old to be pregnant that ain't married, ooh, and she's in a scene. That's a strict religious sect. Woo! Not good. So they're telling her, don't worry, we will protect you. We will be with you at all times, but you won't know how you're going to be pregnant. So what you're looking at is what was once told to me when I was 21 years old, 20 or 21. What you're looking at is the scene where the gods came down and they had a fertilized egg from the king of their planet. That fertilized egg was implanted, transplanted to the womb of a 14-year-old girl called Mary. That is your virgin pregnancy right there in this painting, if you think. It's right before your eyes. That's how you have. Now, you wouldn't know this unless artificial and all these other different things, transplants. This is an intergalactic embryo transplant with the gods from above that are quite matchable, compatible DNA-wise with the Earthlings below, who look the same as the Earthlings below. I guess we are in their image. So here comes the angels, who look like us, giving her this knowledge and calming her down, and then maybe she's asleep and they do the artificial transplant. Okay? But it's an intergalactic or interplanetary, at least, embryo transplant. So now you have the Son of God, who is in the heavens, being born on earth. He's not the mixed breed Son of God. He is the Son of God. That's totally different. And it hasn't been God walking with man for some time. Now we're talking about a special purpose to this God who is now going to walk with man. He's the teacher, and so on, and so on, and so on. And he tries to correct all the mistakes man's doing. He's trying to give you a forgiveness so that you may go on with new knowledge. That's the idea. Advance the Earthling, keeping advancing him so he's not so primitive. So here comes Jesus, and along comes Jesus, comes in a true awakening to Earth colony. Anyway, let's go on. Number 18, now that was the Annunciation. Number 18 is the Assumption. This is Mary ascending into heaven, 1490, and she's in a shim as she does that. Of course, angels are with her. Next, what a masterpiece. This is number 19, the Madonna, 15th century. So what, 1480 or what have you? There's a secret painting for the Masons to be used probably for their knowledge and for their future instructions. This painting is showing a couple infants there, and that'll tell you what it is. And Jesus, of course, with the halo, and Mary, the mother, praying over, meditating over the blessed event that's happening at this time. Above Mary's shoulder, unsuspectingly, right in your face without seeing it, is a flying saucer. And if you blow that up, which is on the right of this, number 19, you will see that, yes, it's a radiating flying saucer, and the man on the ground and his dog have to shield their eyes as they look up at it. They're not looking over at Mary and Jesus. They're looking at the flying saucer, whom Mary and Jesus are paying no mind to. They already have that knowledge. 14-something, what did they know that we do not? And we're not talking about Joe Blow. We're talking about masterpieces from the top artists who have been invited to become a Mason, because hidden knowledge is important for top people. Knowledge is power, they say. Anyway, then you get into number 22. That's in the 1400s as well. And in Kiev, you know, something about Ukraine. Jesus, again, is in a shim, and as he is elevating, and of course there are some angels around, all right? Jesus, in a shim, goes up into the skies. Okay, again, number 23, not as obvious, but they're there, right below Jesus, flying saucers. 24, in this tapestry, flying saucers. 25, flying saucer, top right. 26, in the tapestry, same thing. You have to look at it. 28, this is a war going on that is being noticed in Zurich. So somebody's painting an event that happened here. They didn't understand it. I'm sorry. Now we're looking at Sputnik, number 29. That is the first satellite that went into space from Earth. That's Jesus sitting there. What in the world is Jesus holding? Now, this is 1600. There's nothing that looks like that. Okay, number 30 is, is this Dutch? I think it's Dutch. Anyway, you're talking about a couple ships. And in between these ships in the sky are these round disks with faces in them. They look like grays to me. Next, and whatever year that was, next is Hamburg, Germany, 1697. There's nothing flying then. And that X, by the, you know, that's symbol on the flying saucer. That's the symbol of their planet. Next, 32, very interesting. 17th century, Jesus is crucified again, but you'll see the flying saucers this time. They're blasting off the earth, one on each side. Blasting off the earth, and the earth shook the time Jesus passed. Jesus is dead, the earth shakes. There it is, painted by a man who is in the secret societies with secret knowledge. This is what's on the left of Jesus. Look at 33. That's a man in a flying saucer looking down at Jesus crucified. This is what is on the right. A man looking down at Jesus being crucified from a flying saucer. Blasting off. Phenomenal painting. These are masterpieces from top artists that the Masons invited. They liked the powerful people in the Masonic secret societies. You'll learn about that. Number 35 is the baptism of Jesus. What a painting. 1710. Okay? Now, let your eyes see. Is that a flying saucer beaming streams of light down on Jesus and John the Baptist at the time that the baptism of Jesus is taking place? Witnesses along the bank, Jesus and John the Baptist illuminated by the flying saucer. What kind of knowledge is this? They knew all about it all the way back. There's Gulliver's Travels, you know, all these things that in current day, they bring us slowly to the realization what's going on, because you see them flying anyway. Windsor Castle, 1783, the Queen out there checking it out. That is the slideshow that I do not put in your face. You must come to my website in search of knowledge. That's why you're here. Well, I'm not making you believe anything. I am not pushing what I believe. You don't even know what I believe onto anybody. What I am showing you is what's simply been hidden. And it looks damn factual to me. Who would spend this much time in propaganda and then hide it? That's not how propaganda works. And this is not propaganda. Man didn't just get born with all knowledge man has, you know. I mean, think for a minute. Things did not start 6,000 years ago. Maybe the written language was written and the artifacts were established that we can look at from 6,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago. And then you better get to the early Jesus movement. Not what happened when the Romans got involved, but what happened when the Romans killed Jesus and killed the apostles. What happened to them? Let's read from them. They all wrote books. It says so in one of the Gospels. They're all writing their books when Jesus came to them and said, just look at the Nag Hammadi text. I strongly recommend you find that and buy it. The Nag Hammadi Gospels that were thrown out because Rome threw them out. And I can only wish all 100 were there. But they're not. Only a few survived. And let's see, one of the last slideshows are the jets and airplanes and helicopters, which artifacts should not exist. Okay, artifact number 5B, they argue, this can't be. Somebody did this. But what you're looking at is on the top crown of a room in Egypt, ancient Egypt. And that's, well, that looks like a helicopter, just like the ones from Vietnam. I'm not sure, but that looks like a pillbox, or the Nazis used them along the wall, the great defensive wall. Please hold on while I pause. Anyway, here we are looking at an artifact that just shouldn't exist from Egypt. Here again is another artifact from Egypt of an airplane model, wooden. By the way, that model was later built and flown in modern day. Here's another airplane from Egypt that flies. Here is a model Colombian artifact that was built into a model and flies. So is the next one and the next several. These are all old artifacts from South America. If you look at number 11 on this particular slideshow, you will see in the middle of this artifact, rig production or sketch or however they made this negative. But anyway, you're looking at a satellite. And you're looking at two different gods, one on the left, one on the right. And you're looking at certain symbols of the gods. That's a satellite, communication satellite between Earth and Mars, Earth and their planet. Next, questionable, could this be real? This is a Babylonian artifact with a king and a huge bomb. Could this actually be real? You can see it's a reverse carved cylinder seal. Could this actually be real? That's Nebuchadnezzar II. Okay, more and more missiles, more. By the way, these rocks that fit together that you can't even get a sheet of paper between, if those rocks were heated to where they were soft and pliable, melted, so to speak, you could blend them together very easily and seal block against sealed block. Rock cutters, you can see that you can have precision cuts if you have the alien technology. And 12 is showing you bearded gods in Mesoamerica with alien technology on their back and alien technology coming out the spray holes in front. They're throwing flames at rocks, huh? Are they putting in the mortar between blocks that way? Either way, you have bearded gods in Mesoamerica with alien technologies. We've already seen that one. These artifacts come and go. I love the number 4 of the Hittite scene. There's lots of Hittite scenes of rockets and flying objects. Oh, I'm sorry. Number 5. On number 5, you will see that artifact in the Egyptian temple of Abydos. That's where that artifact is, of the helicopter and the submarine and the private plane and the radar. All these things that no way could exist at the time of the Temple of Abydos. There it is. They say that didn't happen. Okay, so that's slideshow. Ancient astronauts and caves and rock drawings. Well, flying saucer after flying saucer, you will find in the French caves and all these ancient caves occupied once by man, the Neanderthal that later became Homo sapien. We are today Homo sapiens sapien. Thank God, for they advance us. Hopefully, we'll stop being primitive one day and quit killing each other. So here we go. You have just seen a page of slideshows that every single one of them are not believable. Could all this knowledge be hidden from you for all this time? Yes, and it was. Should it be exposed now? I mean, don't we have some type of expansion? Are we still as primitive as the year 300 BC, 3000 BC, 9000 BC? Are we still that primitive? Or can we move on, accept who we are, and move on? But we don't even have the full knowledge of who we are, where we come from, or what we're doing here. Ask that about us, not them. They're here to organize a colony. We're here for what reason? We came after them, long after them. We came for the purpose of relieving them from the yoke of work, the heavy labor part. They shouldn't be doing that. As advanced as they are, but there's no one else, so they did it. And they did it a long time until Inky had had enough. And out come mistake after mistake in these mixing animals, which, by the way, his brother Enlil, who is the Earth Colony commander, gave us Noah's Flood, which the purpose was not only to destroy all this half-elephant, half-fly, these crazy mixtures that Inky was coming up with, trying to find a worker, these abominations, these beings, Enlil destroyed them all from the Flood. He also destroyed these mixed breeds that should not have happened between God and man. Having sex with the daughters of men, they are not there for that. Of course, they don't have many women, and the women they do have are descendants of the king. So they're rather special and usually take it. Okay? So no women to these worker gods. They got to have some kind of help, and they're not going to make the earthling learn to be the space trucker. That isn't going to happen. But they could definitely use the worker earthling to plow the field, raise the crop, or maybe even feed the cows and tend to the sheep. They'd like to eat, you know. Or do you think these gods who we look like don't eat? Again, there is so much here to see, so many of my recordings to listen, and other places to listen, and other places to see, if you look closely. But I give you many clues. I give you the hard evidence. I don't believe you'll find all of this as it is. I'm not telling you what I believe. I'm telling you what we all should know. That's it. Believe it or not, accept it or not, that is not my care. My care is to have it available for those who are in the need to know. That's why you come to me. I do not push this upon you. And I can't tell you how glad I am you came. I thank you for your time in listening to me. I thank you for your time at looking. I thank you for your time in thinking. Good luck to you. And once again, thanks for coming to my website.